Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 56. I'm recording it on Monday, December 8th, 2008. The PE10 level today is 15. That's fair value. That means that stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The title of this podcast is Time is Not a Four-Letter Word. There's an earlier podcast that I recorded. It was podcast number 12, and it was entitled Market Timing, What Works and What Doesn't. I am an advocate of long-term market timing. I am not an advocate of short-term market timing. If you want to find out the basics of what works with market timing, please go to the earlier podcast, podcast number 12, and that will go through the basics. The purpose of this podcast is something a little different. It of course, does advocate long-term market timing. I always advocate long-term market timing. That's the key to the success of the rational investing approach to investing, and also to the valuation-informed indexing strategy for stock investing. But the purpose of this podcast is not to argue that market timing works. It is to argue that the people who understand that long-term market timing works, and I am obviously not the only person who understands this. There are a large number of people who understand this to different levels, to different degrees. Many of the big-name experts understand this at least in some foggy sort of way. Even the people who come out very strongly against market timing, people like John Bogle. John Bogle is probably the lead name if you were looking to find somebody who opposes market timing. But John Bogle talks all the time about reversion to the mean. And reversion to the mean, if it exists, and it does, Bogle is right about that. If reversion to the mean exists, long-term market timing must work. It's a logical impossibility that long-term timing would not work. So even Bogle understands on some level of consciousness that long-term timing works. And of course, there are many, many others who do as well. Warren Buffett obviously understands that long-term market timing works. Warren Buffett often advocates to be fearful when others are greedy and to be greedy when others are fearful. That's valuation-informed indexing. That's just a concise description of valuation-informed indexing. And it's because it works, because all of the smartest investors in the world have discovered that long-term timing works, and the academic research has been showing this for 30 years now, close to 30 years. That's why the historical data also shows it works. If you go back and you look at the historical data dating back all the way to 1870, long-term timing has always worked, and it always will work. It's a logical impossibility that long-term timing would not work. Long-term timing is changing your stock allocation in response to changes in the price level for stocks, but not expecting a benefit from doing so for as long as 10 years. There are some cases when if you change your stock allocation in response to price changes, you might obtain a benefit, in 2 months. If you had changed your stock allocation, if you realized that how dangerous high valuations are, if you realized that 15 months ago and changed your stock allocation, you would have immediately begun receiving benefits from having done so. But you can't count on that. If you had changed your stock allocation in 1995 because prices were too high, you would have started receiving benefits for having done so in January of 2000. From 95 until 99, stocks continued to go up, even though price levels were extremely dangerous. So you didn't really begin obtaining a benefit for having lowered your stock allocation until January of 2000. From that point forward, money invested in stocks has been dead money. And if you had taken that money and put it in Treasury inflation protected securities or I bonds or certificates of deposit, you would have been earning a higher return than you did in stocks from 2000 through the fall of 2007. And of course, with the price crash we've seen in the last year, you would be far, far, far ahead if you had made that change. Long-term timing always works. Again, it's logically impossible it wouldn't work, but we cannot count on it working. Certainly, you cannot count on it working within a year or 2 years. Usually, it will work within 5 years, but it is possible it could take as long as 10 years. So you need to be willing to wait 10 years to be sure that the strategy is going to pay off. But when it does pay off, it usually pays off very, very big. Those who have been following long-term timing were going with very low stock allocations before the price crash, stock allocations of around 20%. So while those investors did see a hit as a result of the price crash, it was minimal compared to the investors who were following the passive investing model and were perhaps, 50% in stocks, 60%, 70%, some were 80%. Those people, of course, were killed. They've lost years and years of accumulated life savings. So, if you want to learn the basics of market timing, please go to podcast number 12, where I cover the basics. But if you want to understand a little bit about how we have to go about helping people to understand how long-term timing works and helping ourselves to understand it, because it's only when others understand this that we're able to tap into their insights. We're able to tap into the life experiences of lots of other investors by spreading the word on long-term market timing. If you want to learn a little bit about how we go about spreading the word, that's the purpose of this podcast. And the point of this podcast, time is not a four-letter word, is that what we need to change is the attitude we bring to market timing. And I don't mean only critics of market timing. Critics of market timing obviously don't think much of it, and they obviously are put it down, and that's just what you would expect. But the problem is, even the advocates of market timing, even people who understand that market timing works, tend to be apologetic about it. And this is a disaster, because the way a public debate proceeds is that the two sides both need to be making their best effort to make their case, and over time people will notice that the arguments for one side are stronger than the arguments for the other side. Well, the arguments in favor of long-term timing are just overwhelming compared to the arguments against it. There are no reasonable arguments against long-term market timing. I've studied this in great depth. I have never found anyone who could make a civil and reasoned argument that long-term timing is a bad idea. I've never seen it. I challenge anyone to bring a civil and reasoned argument that long-term timing does not work. But one of the big problems we have in spreading the word, in getting people to know about this, is that advocates of timing so often fail to make the case effectively because, well, the idea that timing has been turned into a bad word. The word time is treated as a four-letter word. It's treated as if it's something to be ashamed of. Bogle is a perfect example of this. As I said, I've learned much of what I know about long-term timing from John Bogle. And John Bogle, in his books, he has a section of his writings in which he has suggested that long-term timing makes sense, and he has a name he comes up with it for it. He calls it tactical asset allocation, I think, something like that. And Bill Bernstein has something similar. He calls it dynamic asset allocation, something like that. But what they do when Bogle talks about long-term timing, he sort of, the way he phrases it is as if it's something to be ashamed of. If it's something, when you engage in market timing, you're doing something dirty. Bogle will say, if the way he'll start out his discussion is, if you must market time, as if, you'd be better if you just didn't do this. But if you must market time, well, do it with a limited percentage of your portfolio and only do it on rare occasions. And, You know, it might not work. You know, they're all this negativity. The reality is long-term market timing, please always distinguish. I'm going to stop saying it every single time, but there's all the difference in the world between short-term timing and long-term market timing. Short-term timing indeed does not work, as far as I can tell. Long-term timing has always worked. Long-term timing always must work. But long-term timing isn't something to do because you're weak and you can't resist the urge to time. Long-term timing is something to do if you want to be a rational investor. Long-term investing is the key. That's the key to success. Only long-term investors finish ahead in the end. It's impossible to be a successful long-term investing without engaging in market timing, long-term market timing. You have to do this, because if you don't, sooner or later, you're going to get killed. And that's what's happened with this price crash. People who have resisted the common sense desire to engage in market timing are getting killed today. They're getting killed because they accepted the wrong message. Instead of hearing short-term timing is a bad idea, which I think is a correct message, they heard all market timing is a bad idea. And that's the most dangerous message you can ever send to a stock investor. The only thing that protects you from price crashes is long-term market timing. Long-term market timing tells you when to lower your stock allocation so that you don't suffer massive losses in the market. And when you don't suffer massive losses in the market, you, of course, you greatly reduce your risk and you greatly increase your long-term returns. So long-term market timing is a winner every possible way you can look at it. Now, so as I say, the big problem is not that people don't understand this. The big problem is that people talk about it in such mixed up, upside down ways. If you talk about, you know, market timing as if there's something dirty about it, well, people aren't going to do it. People are going to let it slide. We all have a get-rich-quick impulse within us. We all want to avoid market timing. None of us want to lower our stock allocations when prices are dangerous. What the experts should be doing is they should be telling us on a daily basis, you must lower your stock allocation when prices are out of control. You must lower your stock allocation when prices are out of control. Think about the way to compare this to... you know, we all have a innate desire to eat too much chocolate cake and too many potato chips, right? And not exercise enough. We all have a weakness in these, you know, some to a greater degree than others. But none of us, you know, innately want to take care of our health to the extent we should. The one thing we have going for us is at least when we turn to doctors, when we turn to experts in the field, what they tell us is, look, you know, try to cut back on the empty calories. You know, try to eat more nutritious foods. Try to get more exercise. The experts tell us what we need to do. That doesn't mean that we all eat perfectly or that we all exercise perfectly, but it helps. At least we know when we eat that third piece of chocolate cake that we ought to resist. And maybe over time, we develop the ability to resist. In investing, it's exactly the opposite. In the investing, we all have a desire to do the wrong thing. We have a desire to avoid market timing. We have a desire to stay with our high stock allocations no matter how dangerous prices get. But what do the experts tell us? They don't say, no, get out of, you know, lower your stock allocation, protect yourself, don't suffer a life-threatening loss, do something, man. No, the experts, they tell us to do exactly what our worst human impulses tell us. They tell us, stick with that high stock allocation. It might work out. You never know for sure. And if you do engage in market time, well, that's sort of ugly, you know. It's like saying, if you eat spinach, oh, you know, well, you might live. You might survive, but I don't know. You want to go down that road. We need to change the marketing of market timing. We need to promote market timing. It's not enough to say market timing works. Of course market timing works. It's impossible for the human mind to come up with a way in which market timing would not work. But what we need to do is we need to sell it. We need to actively sell it. Now, I want to give a couple of examples of ways in which I see the problem, you know, appearing before us. And here are some words from Michael Kitsis. You hear me quote him often in my podcast. I've had a lot of correspondence with Michael Kitsis. He's a financial planner in Maryland. And you can check out his correspondence with me by going to the blog, A Rich Life blog, at the PassionSaving.com site and entering the name Michael Kitsis, K-I-T-S-E-S, and you will see Michael's emails to me and my emails in return. Here's an email from Michael, November 25th, 2008. And I was arguing to Michael that there's no such thing as an investing expert. You know that there's an earlier podcast where I argue the state of knowledge of investing today is primitive. And I say that there's no such thing as an investing expert until we get to a point where we talk about these issues frankly. Because it's only when we talk about these issues frankly, when we have a public debate on what we've gotten wrong with stock investing, that we will start to get input that makes sense. And we can't have it. It can't be just a tiny number of people. It can't be just, you know, 10% of the investing population that understands that long-term timing is required for success. It has to be everybody. It has to include the people who now advocate passive investing. A lot of them will obviously abandon passive investing as they become better informed. If some don't, that's all to the good. We'll learn from them. But we need to have a public debate about the realities of stock investing. And there really, I don't believe there can be such a thing as an expert, because none of us learn all there is to learn by sitting in a room thinking grand thoughts. We need to share with others, and we cannot share with others today. The possibility of discussing investing has been poisoned by the passive investing dogmas. These dogmas that say, oh, there's some sort of scientific evidence somewhere that long-term timing doesn't work. There's, of course, no such thing. There's never been any evidence that long-term timing doesn't work. There's lots of evidence that short-term timing doesn't work. That same historical data that shows that short-term timing never works shows that long-term timing always works. If we can trust the data on the one point, we ought to be able to trust the same data on the other point. And there's a large body of academic research from 1981 forward showing that valuations do indeed affect long-term returns, that long-term market timing does indeed work. Now, here are some words from Michael's. So I made that point to Michael, and then he responded, and this is part of his response. He says, just bear in mind, I don't think you're ever going to see a true universal consensus on this issue, if only for the simple reason that many people invest so emotionally, they will always make terrible mistakes and do harm to themselves. If you ever give them, quote, permission to not simply hold passively and strategically, or otherwise find a way for them to move investment control out of their own hands. In other words, it is a reality that a large number of people will continue to do harm to themselves in investing as long as they do anything besides being passive and strategic, because their version of active is counterproductive due to the emotional transactions that take place. That's not to say all of this conversation isn't good and we shouldn't try to move forward. But there is a very real human reality to acknowledge here. You'd be shocked if you saw the kind of harm I've seen people do to themselves as a financial planner by the time they come to our firm, that all would have been avoided if they had simply been passive and strategic and taken their hands off their own portfolio. Obviously, I don't believe that's a universal prescription. And our firm itself, we are active, tactical managers who believe there's significant benefit to incorporate valuation into evaluations of investments. But likewise, that doesn't mean that a personal implementation of valuation-driven investment risk management is necessarily going to be effective for everyone either. All right. It's a great email because Michael's getting to the heart of the problem. I very strongly disagree with his conclusions. But Michael is getting to the heart of the problem. He's speaking frankly. He's bringing in personal experience, which is how we learn. He's addressing the question. He's not evading it. I've had many discussions, both with other investors on discussion boards and even with investing experts, where they try to evade these questions instead of addressing them head on. Michael didn't do that here. So I applaud him. Then I also disagree with him. What Michael said, there's two things that I disagree with. One, Michael is saying investors are emotional, and he says they cause themselves great harm. Now, that is true. That I don't dispute for 10 seconds. That's the biggest problem we have in stock investing, that it is so highly emotional a human endeavor. I believe that investing is 70% emotional, only 30% an intellectual project, and that most of the literature deals with intellectual questions, and we need to change that. We need to devote most of our energies on a going forward basis to solving the emotional problems of the investing project, not the intellectual problems. So Michael's right on as far as that goes. But he says that, you know, he's pointing out here that people do the wrong thing. Well, let's think about that. What are these horrible mistakes these people are doing if they change their stock allocations? The horrible mistake that most investors make is most investors increase their stock allocations at times of high valuation when stocks are dangerous. Most investors lower their stock allocations at times of low valuations when the long-term value proposition is very strong. So most investors do the exact opposite of what they should do. Now, what is the best way to solve that problem? The passive model says the way to solve the problem that people invest in stocks at just the wrong time and sell stocks at just the wrong time is to tell them, in essence, that valuations don't matter. What the passive approach says is, don't ever change your stock allocation. Come up with a stock allocation and just stick to it. Don't even look at prices. Well, if you don't look at prices, you are implicitly acting according to a belief that prices don't matter. Because if prices mattered, obviously you would change your allocation in response to big price changes. So the existing model tells people ignore prices. And as Michael points out, it doesn't work. We tell people to ignore prices, but people continue to do just the wrong thing. That get-rich-quick impulse is still there. Telling people to ignore prices doesn't make it go away. It's still there. And what's happening is we're telling people to ignore prices, so what we're really telling them is it's not that bad. If you have a high stock allocation at times of high prices, you're probably going to do okay. That's the not so subtle message that's being sent. Now let's compare that with the rational model of investing, the valuation-informed indexing strategy. What happens there? There we tell people the truth about stock investing as we know it today based on the academic research. The truth is stock investing is far more dangerous at times of high prices than it is at times of moderate or low prices. Stock investing is far more profitable at times of low or moderate prices than it is at times of insanely high prices. Why not, first of all, why not tell them the truth? We should always tell people the truth. You know, this should go without saying. But secondly, let's get to Michael's point. People are emotional. Well, what if we told them these realities? Wouldn't that help the problem? Michael is saying that people come into his practice having made these horrible mistakes. Well, is that any surprise? Given the popularity of the passive investing model, which tells people that valuations don't matter, think of how many times you've been told that timing is impossible, timing is impossible, timing is impossible, timing is impossible. When you've heard something 10,000 times, you come to believe there must be something to it. This is perfectly natural human behavior. What if the message were the opposite? What if every day we're being drilled into your head by every expert in the field? Timing is necessary. Timing is necessary. Timing is necessary. Timing always works. Timing always works. Timing always works. You must time the market. You must time the market. You're doomed if you don't time the market. You're going to lose all your money if you don't time the market. Your retirement's going to fail if you don't time the market. Do you see the difference? Now, of course, we would follow that up by explaining that short-term timing doesn't work, only long-term timing works. Of course you're going to tell people how to do it. But the point is, we want people to believe that they must time the market, otherwise they're not going to do it. People don't want to time the market. People want to do the dangerous, irresponsible thing. We all do. We're all human. We all don't want to eat right. We all don't want to exercise as we should. We all don't want to lower our stock allocations when prices go to insane levels. But experts can make a difference. If experts tell us that these things hurt us, We can be persuaded not to be perfect. We're never going to be perfect. There's never going to be a time when there aren't going to be some people who are going to practice passive investing. That's never going to happen. But if we argue against it, if we point out the dangers of it, if we point out it's been tried four times in the history of the market, and that the first time it brought bone-crushing losses to those who followed it, and the second time it brought bone-crushing losses to those who followed it, and the third time it brought bone-crushing losses to those who followed it, and the fourth time it brought bone-crushing losses to those who followed it. If we do that, we can't make everyone a perfect investor, but we can sure do a lot of good. But we need to stop this apologetic hangdog approach to promoting market timing. Time is not a four-letter word. Now, here's another, the second problem I have with Michael's email. Several times in this email, he refers to investing strategically. Passive and strategic. He combines these two concepts. If you're passive, you're strategic. And again, this is the kind of language Bogle uses. When he talks about long-term market timing, he calls it tactical asset allocation. What the heck is tactical about it? I'd like someone to tell me. Timing is strategic. The purpose of timing is when you set your allocation, you decide what level of risk you want to take on in your portfolio. When the market price goes to insanely high price levels, your risk is obviously elevated. So you strategically want to get your risk level back to where it's supposed to be. That's strategic, not tactical. Your strategy is to keep your risk level roughly constant. But over and over again, Bogle refers to timing as tactical. And Michael Kitsis does the same thing in this email. He suggests there's something strategic about passive investing. It is strategic to be passive. If you decide you're never going to change your stock allocation, that is certainly a strategic call. It's a poor strategic call. What we want people to do are to make good strategic calls. We don't want people to make a strategic call to be passive. We want people to make a strategic call to market time. Now, if you want to argue that short-term market timing is tactical, perhaps. You know, if someone says, "Oh, I think, I have a funny feeling that prices are going to go down over the next 3 months," then obviously that's a tactical call. But long-term timing isn't tactical. Long-term timing is strategic. You're doing it because you want to keep your risk level roughly constant. It's only if you vary from your long-term timing. Say that you engage in long-term timing as a practice, and for some reason the thought enters your head one time, "Well, this time I don't think I'm going to do it. I'm going to be passive for 6 months. I'm going to stick with the same allocation. Prices are now at insanely dangerous levels, but I'm just going to stay here. I got a funny feeling. I'm going to throw the dice." That's tactical. That's a tactical call, and it could pay off. If you were a rational investor in 1997 and you knew that stock prices were insanely dangerous and you said, I'm going to stick. I know it's irrational, but I'm going to take a chance. And you did it for a year, that would have paid off. But it would have been a tactical decision, not a strategic decision. If you then reversed back to your core strategy of investing rationally, always changing your allocation in response to insane price changes, that would have been reverting back to strategic investing. So long-term timing is not tactical, it is strategic. Now there's I posted last week an email from Bill Bangen, who's a financial planner out in California. And Bill Bangen is the author of one of the old school safe withdrawal rate studies, passive investing studies for retirement. And Bill has gotten his clients out of stocks entirely because of the recent price crash. And he sent an email. I asked him, you know, why he did this and so forth. And, you know, he gave his answers. Please go to the blog to read what Bill said. But this blog post of mine generated a discussion thread at the Goon Central board. There's a link to the Goon Central board there at my site at the homepage of the blog. And here's a comment that Schroeder makes, and it's a good comment. He says, "Rob, This is quite an interesting reply from Bill Bangin. And then he quotes from Bill Bangin. I am not using market timing, as my decision to retreat to cash had little to do with any market indicators. Likewise, my re-entry to the market will not be conditioned on any indicators. I am totally unable to call market bottoms, so I don't even try. I sold all client equities because I perceived an unusually high degree of risk in the economy and the financial system. Schroeder's a goon poster. Schroeder says, but in this case he's making a good comment. Schroeder says, in my opinion, Bangin is rationalizing, saying he is not market timing. He is being dishonest when he says his decision to move to cash had, quote, little to do with any market indicators. How else did he determine that he, quote, perceived an unusually high degree of risk in the economy and the financial system, unquote? I'm very disappointed. Bangin does not appear to be a straight shooter. Here's my response. I say, I agree, Schroeder. He is timing the market for good or for ill. For him to deny that what he is doing is timing just confuses things. I'd like to add a word or two in Bangin's defense for the purpose of adding some balance to the thread. Lots of people are confused today. Lots of people are reacting emotionally. Lots of people are feeling forced to acknowledge that they don't know as much about stock investing as they once thought they did. Bangin is not alone in this regard. I bet that many of Bangin's clients are happy that he got them out of stocks when prices had fallen only one-third of the amount they ended up falling. I don't think they should be as happy as they probably are, because he is not putting forward a plan for getting back into stocks. My belief is that they are not going to end up doing well in the long term unless he comes up with a more thoughtful approach to deciding when to lower and when to increase stock allocations. Still, it may be that his clients will end up doing better than the clients of advisors who are following a dogmatic passive investing approach. I'll tell you what I see as the biggest risk for Bangin. Say that stocks stabilize at a P10 level of about 14, 15, 16 for 5 years. Bangin may well remain out of stocks for that entire time period. There will not necessarily be any signals telling him things have changed from where they stand today if prices stabilize. During that time period, those in stocks will be earning a real annual return of something near 6%. Bangin's clients will be earning less. I do not at all endorse the Bangin move, but I of course do not endorse the dogmatic passive investing line either. I do applaud Bangin for telling us what he did and why he did it. It gives people something to think about. It shows that some long-time passive investing enthusiasts are having serious doubts. The discussion that follows from Bangin and others making moves like this may lead to something good. Bangin is confused about how stock investing works, in my assessment. He sure ain't the only one. My hope is that he will dig down deep, engage in some serious thinking about why he has felt compelled to abandon passive investing, and perhaps take us to someplace better than the place that most of us are in today. Confusion can be an intermediate step on the path to an enhanced and more long-lasting confidence in one's new strategy. Well, Bangin, I think, is making a mistake. But the passive investors, the dogmatic passive investors, are making a worse mistake. Bangin at least is able to acknowledge that passive investing has failed. You know, wake up, people. Passive investing has failed. It's a disaster. It's a mistake. And the way to deal with it is not to pretend that we still think we're right in advocating passive investing. The way to deal with it is to acknowledge we got it wrong and search for something better. Bill Bangin isn't there yet. As I mentioned in that reply, I think what's going to happen is Bangin's taken his clients out of stocks. He doesn't have a plan for getting back in. And we may well stabilize at fair value for 5-6 years, and his clients will fall behind. And sooner or later, he will give up the ship and get his clients back in stocks. And you know what might happen then? Then we might suffer another price crash. This is not necessarily the last price crash. We are at fair value today. The usual scenario you see after a massive bull market is not to stabilize at fair value. I'd like to see us stabilize. And I think if we could acknowledge that passive investing was a mistake, we could stabilize. But if we don't, if we continue to promote this emotional approach to investing, my guess is we will see another price crash somewhere down the road. It might not be for another 5-6 years. And we will drop as low as 7 or 8 in the P10 level. And that will mean that the dogmatic passive investors will suffer another huge hit. and that people following Bangin's approach will likely suffer another huge hit if they get back in the interim. We need a rational approach to investing. You cannot rule out market timing. Market timing is essential to success. It's impossible to rule it out. It does not work. It has never worked in the past. It will not work in the future. What we need to do is not to try to avoid market timing. We need to understand when market timing is right, the right thing to do, and when market timing is the wrong thing to do. In other words, we should be discussing how stock investing works. We should be discussing the realities of stock investing. And that's something we're not doing today. And the reason we're not doing it is because too many of us are stuck in this passive investing fantasy world. This idea that there's some sort of universe somewhere where it's not necessary to change your stock allocation in response to dramatic price changes. Now, I also want to read a little bit from a thread at the Bogleheads.org forum. It's a wonderful thread. The thread here, the first post was put up, I'm trying to help you find it if you want to look for it. The first post was put up November 30th, 2008. The thread starter is put up by a poster whose screen name is CJ King. CJ King. And the title of the thread is Free Lunch, : Rule of Thumb for Varying Equity Exposure. And what CJ King does is he lays out a very simple rule of thumb for when to lower your stock allocation in response to, insane price levels. And it's a very simple approach. It's a little more simple than I'd like, but it's essentially valuation-informed indexing. That's what CJ King is proposing. He just takes one particular approach. The valuation-informed indexing approach doesn't specify any one approach for changing allocations. It says you must change allocations when the long-term value proposition of stocks changes dramatically. CJ King lays out a specific rule of thumb for doing so, and that's, of course, helpful. People should be debating such rules of thumb on a daily basis. This shouldn't be some special thread that comes one day and then we don't hear about it again for months. This is something we should be discussing every single day on every investing discussion board on the internet. This is critical. The key to your success as an investor is what asset allocation you choose. There are many, many, many people who will tell you that, including many passive investing advocates. So why don't we discuss how we should change our stock allocation after setting it? The passive investors say that once you set it, you stick with it, and that is crazy. I speak strongly because I feel it has to be said strongly. It makes no sense. Is there anything you buy on this planet where you buy it the same amount at any price? If you're happy to buy a particular car for $20,000, would you also be happy to buy it for $60,000? That's what people did with stocks. Stocks were priced at 3x fair value at the top of the bubble. And the big name experts, most of them, not all of them, but most of them, were telling us just to keep putting money into stocks, just as we always did. Make no adjustments. This is why we've had a price crash. We overinvested in stocks, and the reason we overinvested in stocks is people told us, experts, quote-unquote experts, told us that valuations don't matter for practical purposes. Passive investing is like driving a car without brakes. You're driving on the highway. You're driving 65 miles per hour. You're doing fine. There's no sign of trouble. But sooner or later, you're going to get to a toll or something, and the traffic ahead is going to slow down, and you're going to have to brake. You're going to have to lower your speed down to, 20 or 15 or 10 miles per hour. And if you don't have brakes on that car, you're going to smash into the car ahead of you. You're going to get yourself hurt, and you're going to get other people hurt. That's what passive investing is. Passive investing is a philosophy of investing that says, don't ever tap on the brakes. Always drive 65 miles per hour. It's always safe. There are circumstances where driving 65 miles per hour is indeed safe, but there are other circumstances when it is the most dangerous thing with your money you can possibly do. Break down dead ahead. And you better have brakes on that car. And what we've done when we've advocated passive investing is we took the brakes off the cars of all middle-class investors who follow this approach. And we've hurt ourselves. And there should be no apologies in explaining that that's a bad idea. No apologies whatsoever. The apologies should be on the part of the people advocating this irresponsible, dangerous, emotional strategy. Another example of this, I'll get back to the Bogleheads thread, but another example of this that just comes to mind, and I have to mention it. There was a paper written recently by Brad DeLong. He's an economist who has a very successful blog, and I quoted from that in a recent podcast, and the paper itself was excellent. Brad DeLong points out that Robert Shiller, the author of Irrational Exuberance, he did research back in 1981 showing that valuations affect long-term returns. That should have been the end of passive investing right there. But it wasn't. People turned the other way. They pretended it didn't exist. And Brad DeLong pointed out in this paper that one of the arguments that was made is that Shiller and all those who have done similar research, they might have been data mining. They were looking backwards, and they might have just, found something that worked that really wasn't significant when they showed that long-term timing works, and that only now, after the crash, do we know for sure that it really works, because now we have an out-of-sample test. We've been able to test what happens with these strategies since 1981, and of course, they've far outperformed passive investing. Now, the paper makes a good point. The evidence is stronger for long-term timing now that it's been proven yet again. That certainly is a good point that should be made. But I think the Brad DeLong, it's a note. He called it a note. It's not lengthy enough to be called a paper. But the Brad DeLong note, it illustrates the problem we're dealing with. When he uses the phrase junk science to refer to what Shiller showed. Now, if you want to say that what Shiller showed was not proven 100%, I certainly can go along with that. It's proven to a greater extent today than it was in 1981 because there's so much research showing it and because there's now out-of-sample data showing it. So the point is well taken that we should not be dogmatic about long-term timing. But what's the alternative? The alternative we've been following from 81 to 2008 is passive investing. Is that not junk science? What support is there for passive? What support is there for the idea that valuations don't affect long-term returns? Is there support for that? That's also based on historical data. And the problem is, that's also out-of-sample data. The passive investing work was out of sample. And the passive investing work does not look at long-term timing. What they did, the studies that are cited as supporting passive investing are studies that showed that short-term timing does not work. And it's true, I believe, that short-term timing does not work. But that doesn't show that long-term timing doesn't work. So there was a logical error in those studies. Are studies that have a logical error, is that not junk science? Why did we jump to the conclusion that Shiller's research might have been junk science, but we didn't jump to the conclusion that the passive investing studies might have been junk science? The reason is human emotion. We want to believe that eating 3 pieces of chocolate cake with every meal is good for us. So when somebody comes out with a study showing that eating 3 pieces of chocolate cake is a bad idea, we call it, oh, that's junk science. We'll need some out-of-sample testing on that one. That's not good enough. But when somebody comes out with a study saying, hey, chocolate cake doesn't have any calories in it, chocolate cake will make you strong and handsome and wealthy, we say, hey, now we've proven it. We've proven that what we always have wanted to do and what makes no sense whatsoever is the right thing to do. We've got science on our side now. I'm being mocking because we need to start ridiculing these ideas. We all carry these dangerous ideas within us. We all need to ridicule that side of our mind that tries to get us to believe this gibberish. There is no universe where it's a good idea to act as if valuations did not affect long-term returns. Of course valuations affect long-term returns. We need to stop playing games, and we need to stop this apologetic approach of you know, admitting, in quotes, admitting that maybe long-term timing is sometimes okay. It's not sometimes okay. It's always required. It's not sometimes okay. It's always required. All right, going back to the Bogleheads thread. There's a fellow here. Let me see if I can get this screen name. This fellow's screen name is Dave D. He says, a kindred spirit. This is essentially what I am doing. So you see, it's not. There are lots of people doing this. I don't know what the percentage is. What I usually estimate it as, I've been on a lot of discussion boards, and my sense is about 10% of the community of most boards follow long-term timing. 20% are dogmatic passive investors. They can't even tolerate hearing long-term timing discussed. And 70% are in the middle. 70% long-term timing makes sense to them, but they understand that most experts endorse passive investing, and so they lean towards passive investing. But they're not really sure. And of course, if they're not really sure, they're going to abandon passive investing when times are hard, which is sort of what Bengen has done. Bengen is probably in that 70%. So, you know, if you ask him a questionnaire, do you agree with the passive investing principles, he'll say yes. But when the chips are down, he doesn't have great confidence in it, and he abandons it. But of course, he won't admit to timing. He says that what he's doing is not market timing, but it is. And even Michael Kitsis, who acknowledges that he changes allocations for his clients in response to price changes, even Michael Kitsis won't admit that he's timing. He comes up with other phrases. He'll call it, he says it's just prudence, or, you know, well, of course it is prudence. But why not call it what it is? It's market timing. That's what I loved about Schroeder in that thread. Schroeder, as I mentioned, he's a goon poster. He posts all the time, deceptively, puts up intimidation posts, word game posts. But he's being sincere in that thread, and I love it. That's why I go to that board. People ask me, why do you go with these goons? I always deplore the goonishness, always, often, in my posting. But you can learn things by talking to these people, because there's no one who benefits from passive investing. No one. Not one person on this planet. All of us, in our hearts, want to know how to invest effectively. The goons destroy discussion boards so that we can't talk about it, but that doesn't mean that deep in their hearts they don't want to invest more successfully. Of course they do. Why wouldn't they? Schroeder wants to know how to invest successfully. He's got a hang-up about passive investing. He's got a hang-up because this has been drilled into his head for 30 years now. There was a post, the most abusive poster at that board today. You know, used to be grainy or for a long time at a loss. The most abusive poster there today is Drip Guy. And Drip Guy, you know, he just gets so angry. He gets so over the top. But he had a post a couple months ago. And I watch for sincerity. And he put up this post, and I think he was sincere. And he said, Rob, I forget exactly how it went, but he had a post where he said, you know, he was sort of trying to defend the behavior of the goons. And he was saying, look, you know, we sort of act like jerks, you know, which of course they do. We sort of act like jerks, but we do that because, you know, he was saying we have a good intent. Now, I don't think there's any justification for the behavior. I'm not defending the behavior, but I'm just trying to, you know, play devil's advocate, give the other side. In his mind, how does he justify his behavior? In his mind, he's protecting people. Protecting people, in quotes, from advocacy of market timing. He's heard so many people, so many big name experts, find fault with market timing or disparage it or be apologetic about it, that he thinks even goon posting is a good thing to do to stop discussions of timing. And in this post he said, Rob, We just don't believe it's possible to time the market. He doesn't. Drip Guy does not believe it's possible to time the market. That's why, you know, he eats his own cooking. You know the phrase, he eats his own cooking. He's lost money in this stock crash, lots of it. And all these other goon posters have lost money. They put up a lot of insincere posts, but they have lost money. They've suffered. They've paid a price. And what I want is for us all to stop paying the price. I want the goon posters to stop paying the price. I want the normals to stop paying the price. I want the investing quote-unquote experts to stop paying the price. I want us all to start speaking frankly, honestly, accurately about what the historical data has been telling us for 2-3 decades now. That long-term timing works. That short-term timing doesn't. That was a big insight. But that long-term timing does. That's every bit as important an insight, if not more so. We need to make that distinction. And we need to stop apologizing for it. Time is not a four-letter word. So this guy says a kindred spirit. You know, I just point that out. And then he goes on. He explains what he does personally. But I point out that, just to point out that there are other people, you know, out there doing this. And then there's another guy, Peter 71. You know, he says, how far back have you back tested? So he's interested in the idea. There are lots of people interested. There's one quote I'm going to get to here that where a guy comes out critical of it. This is it. Guy named Yobria. I'm surprised that he's critical of it. I recall Yobria being a very good poster in the days when I was at Vanguard Diehards, but He seems here to be critical of it. And he says, I haven't seen a lot of people get rich using backtesting patterns. I have seen many people underperform by failing to set an asset allocation and stick to it. So he's endorsing passive investing, no question about it. Once people develop flexible asset allocation plans, they tend to, quote, flex by buying high and selling low. In the current environment, how many people do you know that are dumping safe investments and loading up on stocks? Look even at the discussion of bogleheads, the savviest 1% of investors. Well, that gets right to the heart of it. He's essentially giving a message very similar to the Michael Kitsis message. He's saying, if, you know, Michael had that great phrase where he said, if we give people quote-unquote permission, to change their asset allocation in response to prices. Well, that's just what I want to do. I want to give everyone permission to invest rationally. That's the goal. And Yobria here is saying, if we give people permission, they're going to do the wrong thing. They're going to invest emotionally. And that's just what Michael was saying. Michael was saying, these clients come in and they're emotional. And if we give them permission, they're going to mess up. And my answer to that is, why do you think that? You think it because you've seen so many mess up. But they're not messing up because they're stupid. People are not stupid. People are not bad. We have bad within us. We have a get-rich-quick within us, but we can control it. We can rein it in. I've seen this on discussion board after discussion board after discussion board. We've had hundreds of people contribute constructively to these discussions. People are not bad. People are not stupid. Let's stop presuming that investors are universally morons. And I really feel that's what's being said here. I'm saying it, you know, much more harshly. But that's the implication. And so, now, what Yobria says here, he says, how many people do you know that are dumping safe investments and loading up on stocks? Now, of course, people should be increasing their stock allocations today. Prices were at insanely high levels a year ago. They're at good values today. Not low, but moderately priced. And people should be certainly increasing their stock allocations. Any rational investor is increasing his stock allocation today. But he says, look even at the discussion of Bogleheads, the savviest 1% of investors. First of all, are they really the savviest 1%? If they're the savviest 1%, why the heck are they lowering their stock allocations when prices have fallen? Is Bill Bangin in the savviest 1%? I would sure like to think so. He's one of the most quoted financial planners in the area of retirement planning. I'd like to think he's in the savviest 1% of all investors. Bangin is abandoning stocks. Instead of increasing his stock allocation, he's going to zero. Why? It's not because he's dumb. Give me a break. It's because passive investing doesn't work. It's because passive investing puts the wrong ideas into your head. All these people who are getting emotional today, and they are, they're getting emotional because they didn't lower their stock allocations when they should have. Rational investors were telling them from 1995 forward that prices were insanely high and they should have been lowering their stock allocations. If you had been going with a 20% stock allocation before this price crash hit, you wouldn't be freaking out today. You'd be increasing your stock allocation today, just as you should be. What the passive investors say is, go with the highest stock allocation you can bear when prices are insanely dangerous and then increase it when prices fall. That can't work. You can't go with 75% stocks when the PE10 level is 30 and then go to 80% stocks when the PE10 level is 15. You can't do it. If you take that kind of hit, if you have a 70-80% stock allocation and stocks fall, prices fall by 50%, you've lost 35-40% of your life savings. You're not going to increase your stock allocation in those circumstances. But if you had a 20% stock allocation when the PE10 level was 30, as you should have, and stocks fall 50%, you've lost 10% of your life savings. That's a hit. But that's a hit that the average middle class person, the average informed investor, can bear to take. So rational investors are doing what they should today. Rational investors are increasing their stock allocations today. They're not freaking out. They're not lowering their allocations. And the reason why rational investors are doing the right thing and passive investors are doing the wrong thing is that rational investing teaches the right message and passive investing teaches the wrong message. Rational investing teaches that valuations matter. And if you're serious about it, understanding that valuations matter, you better be changing your stock allocation when prices change dramatically. You better be engaging in market timing. If you want to be a successful long-term investor, passive investing tells just the opposite story. Passive investing says, hey, give in to that get-rich-quick impulse. Don't worry about it. It's all going to be different this time. Somehow you're going to make it through. Let the dice roll. Daddy needs a new pair of shoes. There's another guy here in the thread. He says, what's this guy's name? It's Gray Fox, very smart poster. He says he's following this approach. Good for him. We should be learning. The people who... Here, Gray Fox makes a great comment. Here's a wonderful comment. I think eventually the Boglehead advice will be to do something like this. It is foolish to pretend that bubbles don't exist. Be cautious. I think eventually the Boglehead advice will be to do something like this. You see? That's the dream. Bogle should be advocating this. Bogle is 60% a rational investor, 40% a passive investor. The 40% passive poisons the rational. Bogle's advice has failed in the real world. But Bogle can salvage his approach by rejecting the passive investing model and advocating the rational investing model, which he also understands. He just doesn't push it. He apologizes for it. When he includes it in his books, he talks about it like it's something dirty. Time is not a four-letter word, John Bogle, please. Listen to your own advice. Listen to Gray Fox. I think eventually the Boglehead advice will be to do something like this. Listen to your smartest community members, John Bogle, please. Call your office. I recall there being another comment down here that it may have been. Yeah, I mean, basically, the discussion goes back and forth, but they basically say, that they argue this back and forth, and the people arguing for the valuation-informed indexing approach argue that yes, it's hard for the passive investors to stick, just as I was saying, but that if you understand, see, the key is if you understand stocks, you can respond rationally. The problem with the passive investing approach is it doesn't make sense. And so in order to stick to it, you've got to sort of kid yourself. And then when you suffer a big loss, kidding yourself doesn't seem like such a hot idea. But if you're straight with yourself, then when the chips are down, you've got something to fall back on. You've got your human reason to fall back on. And you can do the right thing. But we're never going to make long-term timing a popular strategy by suggesting there's something dirty about it. Michael Kitsis is giving good advice to his clients. He doesn't advocate passive investing. He advocated that people lower their stock allocations when prices are insanely high. What Michael should be doing is advertising that. You know, he should be taking out advertisements saying, you know, I'm not a passive investor. I'm not one of these people that cost you your life savings, a big hunk of it. I'm a long-term timer. You know, let's make up some jingles in favor of long-term timing. Let's market it. But instead, I have an email from him where he says, I don't view this as market timing. Well, why not? Why not? Is there some reason why even the people who understand that market timing is required come across apologetically about it? Passive investing doesn't work. And I can say that so strongly because it's not a question of you know, it's not the price crash that showed that to me. It's thinking through these issues that showed it to me. There always are going to be times when prices get high and when they get low. We're always going to go through these changes. This is the history of the stock market. But if you want to succeed long term, you've got to be prepared for whatever happens. And the only way you can be prepared is to understand how the probabilities change in different sorts of environments. And that means looking at valuations. That means taking valuations seriously. Not just saying the words, valuations affect long-term returns, which some passive investors, all passive investors are willing to acknowledge. But that's not enough. You've got to do something about it. Actions speak louder than words. If you're going to believe that valuations affect long-term returns, you sure better be changing your stock allocation in response to big price changes. I'll finish up by reading another post that I put to the thread at the Goon Central Board. I say, I'll try a different angle. Anytime, this is, I'm quoting myself here. Anytime that you buy stocks, you know that there is going to be a future day when we experience a severe recession. The PE10 level generally drops to about 8 in a severe recession. So anytime you buy stocks, you know that somewhere down the road, stocks are going to be priced at a PE10 level of 8. You don't know when this is going to happen. You just know that you are going to see this day at some future time. Given this reality, can it be said that the risk of buying stocks is the same at all price levels? It cannot. If you buy when the PE10 level is 8, there's not much downside in buying stocks. If we see a severe recession, all that is going to happen is that stocks will drop to the same price level at which you purchased them. Doesn't hurt you. How about if you buy at 16, about where we are today? A drop to 8 would hurt, but there's a good chance that the drop to 8 will not happen for a good bit of time. In the meantime, you will be earning strong returns from being in stocks. At 16, the probabilities are on your side. How about at 24? Here, the loss experienced with a drop to 8 is so severe, 2/3 loss, that the probabilities are no longer on your side. You've got to hope that the drop to 8 is held off for a long, long time. How about at 32, which we were at not very long ago? Here the odds are so much against you that it is insane to go with a high stock allocation. Why not just put your retirement money on lottery tickets and get the loss and the accumulated wealth of a lifetime over more quickly? The rational investor seeks to get the probabilities on his side. The rational investor is the house at a casino. The passive investor is the gambler at a casino. There are times when gamblers get ahead of the house. That happened in the late 1990s. But the house usually ends up ahead if the gambler stays at the tables long enough. For a long-term investor, rational investing is the way to go. You don't want to be the gambler at a casino. You want to be the house. Passive investing is being the gambler. Rational investing is getting the probabilities on your side so that in the long term, you're sure to end up ahead. Rational investing is being the house at the casino. The problem, as I see it, is that most of us don't think these issues through. Most of us are intimidated when the subject of investing comes up, and we assume that the experts know better than we do. And something we fail to take into consideration is most of the experts who are quoted in the news media are smart people, but they are compromised because most of them are involved in some way, shape, or form in the stock selling industry. So it's very hard for them to make a strong case that people need to sell stocks, even when that's what the evidence shows. To their credit, the ones that I quote do include discussions in their writings and in their speeches telling us that stocks are dangerous at high prices. Bogle's done that. Bernstein's done that. Scott Burns has done that. Michael Kitsis has done that. These people try to get the word out, but there are pressures on them that limit what they can say, or at least they feel that they do. And what we need, you know, what we really need is some sort of competition. We need to have a group of financial planners. Michael Kitsis made a great comment in one of his emails, not that one I quoted, but a recent one. And he said, you know, he was telling me, he says he talks to a lot of financial planners, and he said a lot of them are starting to have doubts about passive investing. And I said, Michael, bring them to PassionSaving.com. You know, let's have a talk. Let's get a group together, and let's change the history of investing. But Michael's not quite as enthusiastic as I am about that idea today. But let's say a little prayer. But, I was saying, Michael is saying that a lot are starting to lose confidence. I've lost the point that I was originally going to make, but he was saying that a lot are starting to lose confidence. Oh, I think I've lost it. I can't pull it back. But he said that one of the problems is that the financial planning industry was basically born during a time period of the hugest bull market in history. So there's no history of giving both sides of the story. We don't have competing forces. What we need are, you know, if we had 50% of the financial planners were advocating passive investing and 50% were advocating rational investing, you'd have all these great advertisements where, you know, one side would say, look at our track record, look at the historical data, look at common sense. Rational investing is best. And then, fine, you'd have people advocating passive investing too. But so what? That's healthy. People would hear both sides of the story, and some people would choose passive, and some would choose rational. but we all would at least hear both sides of the story. But what is so messed up in Investo world is that because this industry was developed during the most insane bull market in history, all of the advice is heavily slanted. And we're not getting the straight story by a long shot. And all of this, you know, the passive investors, they claim to have academic research on their side when the reality is quite the contrary. There's a ton of academic research showing that valuations affect long-term returns. And it's been around for close to three decades. And if we only had firms positioning themselves as the rational investing firms, they would make that case. There'd be money behind it. You know, not just some guy posting on the internet behind it. There'd be money behind it. And then you would hear it. And then when you heard it, you'd talk it over with your friends and you'd say, you know, some people would choose the passive route, but a lot of people would choose the rational route. I know this because I've seen how people respond to these ideas on investing discussion boards when they are permitted to discuss them honestly and openly and reasonably and civilly. So, we all need to stop apologizing for advocating market timing. Market timing is good. By nature, it is good. It is required. Yes, there are ways to engage in market timing that don't work. Short-term timing does not work. But market timing is essential. Market timing is required for success as a long-term investor. Time is not a four-letter word. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.